I'm wrestling, do not weep for me. Celebrate what I am. Celebrate what I have been. Celebrate what I represent. And celebrate the many ways I have impacted your life. I will survive this test as I have survived others. I am forever etched into the very fiber of all mankind. The world needs me. Time is on my side. History guarantees me. I am wrestling. Do not wait for me.
What's up, everyone? You're listening to episode number 83 of the T-Row and Funky Show, brought to you, as always, by Defense Soap, the film that you've built, and Dahmer Mats. Tommy, I just realized that I had thought we had done a show since I got back from Asia, but that is not the case. So, some big news. Obviously, I won my fight, and now it's been announced that my next one's my retirement fight. So that's kind of fun. But I know today,
dude, let's talk a little bit, Ben. I mean, you've dominated the MMA landscape in Asia. What are you, 17-0 now?
17-0
career.
Yes, sir.
And you got one more to go, and you're hanging it up.
Hanging it up, and that's kind of been the plan for a long time. You know, I've started letting people in within the last 2 years when my plan was to be done. And the main thing there is that I loved reading athlete biographies growing up. And I was always depressed because nobody ever quit on time. Everyone always hangs on. Everyone always thinks they have longer. And they don't. And you just don't. And, you know, Father Time's undefeated against everybody. And so I always said, you know, two things. Number one, I don't want to go on that downhill, where people think they can still be competitive, but they slowly decline, and they slowly decline, and they slowly decline. And then all of a sudden they're a shell of what they once were. There's nowhere worse than fighting for this, right? Because you can do bodily harm. It's not like baseball where you just suck, or golf where you just suck, like Tiger Woods, right?
Yeah.
Like, you actually get hurt. And then number two was that every athlete, or damn near every athlete, and there's statistics on this, ends up broke, right? And so it's Chael has a good saying. It's not what you make, it's what you keep. So, you know, I've always been cognizant that I've tried to never live above my means. I still drive my 2007 Prius that I got when I graduated college. So I'm in a good position to retire as well.
That's awesome, man. So let me ask you this. Do you feel yourself declining, or are you retiring because you don't, but, the data would support the fact that at your age that could happen at any moment?
A couple things. I did say I would come back if I got to fight whoever the number one guy is, and his name's not Tyron Woodley, right? Because Tyron's my buddy. Tyron is number one right now. So that's number one. I just want to say that. And then, I'm physically not the same. You know, MMA is weird because a lot of people don't start it until later. So you have this skewed view of when you're reaching your peak, because you're gaining these skills, right? I mean, I started when I was 24 going on 25.
Right. So you're gaining skills, but physically you're not gaining anything.
Yeah. I mean, I used to be a machine. I could just go and go and go. I'd never get sore. I'd never get tired. I'd get up the next day and go and go and go. And now it's like, damn, dude, I take a week off. I was in really good shape. If I take a week off, I try to do a hard workout, and I'm like, I am so sore. I mean, good Lord.
How old are you, Ben?
I'm 33.
Yeah, so you went a little longer than I did, because I retired in April of 2012, which put me at basically 31 years old, which is, you know, about the same time. And I felt the same way. Like, I didn't feel like my speed or strength had really been compromised, but my recovery those last 2 or 3 years, I mean, it was amazing how much harder it was for me to recover between workouts or from a tough tournament, or even just like traveling. Just, you know, you start to sense the little things. They start they start creeping in. And in a game of inches, which MMA is no different, right? In a game of inches, I'm sure that you see those things, and you're doing, you know, deductive reasoning here, and you're like, hey, you know, eventually this might bite me. It hasn't yet, and that's why I'm getting out.
Yeah, 100%. I guess there's two more things that tie into this is that, number one, I used to freaking love training, and some people, I know you said you necessarily didn't feel the same always. I can say I really enjoyed my training, whether it was wrestling or mixed martial arts. And now it's like I'm disciplined, so I force myself to work out. And I don't miss workouts. I just don't do it. But, man, there's a lot of days where I don't want to go, and that just wasn't the case before.
Yeah, so let me ask you this, Ben, because I think, you know, we're in episode 83 of a wrestling podcast.
Yeah.
And it's clear, there's no question that you just love wrestling. You love it. You love, it's just a part of who you are. I'm the same way. I think you really like MMA. I think that you enjoy it and you like the you know, the game of it, but do you love MMA? Do you love the sport?
No, don't love it like I love wrestling.
You like to do, and it was a fun, right. So, but it was fun though. You enjoyed it.
Yeah,
though, right?
I enjoy it. I like it. I don't feel the same way about it as wrestling. And kind of the other point I was going to get to a second ago was competition is very selfish, right? If you're doing it correctly, it's a very selfish pursuit. And that was why when I was younger, I said 30 because I knew I was going to have kids and I knew I'd be coaching in some capacity.
Right.
And so when you're really focused on yourself, you're taking away from, you know, giving your time to your kids and your family and or giving your time to whoever it is you're coaching, right? Because you are focused on yourself. You want to do the best job you can. You got to be focused on yourself. You got to be selfish.
I could not agree more, man. It is such a selfish lifestyle, right? And
100%.
What's interesting is when you're a college athlete, you know, the institution, the athletic department, the coaches, you know, they promote and they applaud you having that singular focus. It is, in fact, that selfish mentality that is needed is put on a pedestal, right?
Yes,
so
100%.
When you're doing it at that time, it's like, man, you're so focused, he's so dedicated, he's so committed. Look at him go, man. He's not going to be denied. And then if you get married and you have kids and stuff, it's like, one, you know, just people and yourself in general, you just start to realize it's like, do I really need to be this way forever? Like, is this really the right way?
Yeah, but to your point, it's so funny, Tommy, because I just had this conversation in my own head like a couple weeks ago, where it was like, I think my wife was trying to get me to go socialize or do something like that with people our age, and it was like, I just don't want to do it. I want to think about what I need to think about. I want to focus on myself. And it's like, and she kind of got mad at me, and it's like, okay, you're right. That is pretty abnormal behavior for someone of 33 to want to, like, just think about focusing on himself, right, and not want to go socialize and not want to do anything and be obsessive, right? But it's like, shoot, like, especially in high school when most stupid kids are out partying and doing stuff they shouldn't be doing and getting in trouble. And the kids who are focused are so applauded for doing what they're doing and not socializing and being, and, you know, having a goal. But then when you're 33, it's like, what the hell's wrong with you? Why won't you go socialize?
There's no doubt about it. And so I think it takes, you know, a little bit of intellect to pick up on that. And it's like, okay, I got to transition myself a little bit. That focus and that ability to kind of dial in on the task at hand, I can take that with me the rest of my life, and that's a unique skill set that you develop, but I've also got to learn how to filter it.
I don't want to freaking filter it, Tommy. I just want to be obsessive. I just want people to not yell at me for it.
If you did not have a wife or kids and you wanted to just have a really limited social network, you actually could keep doing it.
I'm going to consider it. I'll consider.
Yeah, but some tells me you're not doing that.
Yeah, probably not, unfortunately.
Well, congratulations, man. I think that, you know, and I'm as guilty as everybody else, but I think that what you've done in transitioning out of wrestling in your prime and going into MMA, kind of going against the current like you've always done and really looking at your ability to maximize yourself in MMA just a little bit more non-traditionally and looking at your opportunities between the UFC and other promotions and just what you've done the past 5, 6, 7 years, however long it's been cool to watch, and I think that you need to be congratulated. I've never really done it publicly, but it's pretty awesome what you've been able to do and pull off.
Sure, I appreciate that. And Tommy, and I just want to make this clear. I did say come back to fight the number one guy, who if it's not Tyron. And I am not retired from competition. I think going into my old years, I'm going to have to do something where I'm not trying to be the best in the world at it, just something to be competitive, something where I can stay in shape and kind of have a goal because I need those things. You know, it's something like we're talking about the Midlands, which now that I have a fight on November 24th and I'm having a kid on December 10th, maybe a challenge. I'm still going to kind of put the feelers out to all the guys who I wanted on the team to see if they want to do it. But I'm definitely open to, you know, wrestling possibly some in the future. Again, I'm not going to try to be the best in the world at it, but just to do something or, you know, or grappling, jiu-jitsu type matches.
So I'll tell you what's interesting, Ben, and I think you're similar is, and I am passionate about wrestling, always have been, but what I learned when I left wrestling as a competitor is that more than being passionate about just wrestling specifically, I'm just a passionate person. And when I developed an interest and a target goal, you know, I get really passionate, not much different than I was in wrestling. And so, you know, my prediction for you, because I've gotten to know you over the years here, is that, you know, you're just going to apply that same passion that you've had for competition to other things. Maybe you dive even deeper into AWA than you already have or something. I just feel like you're going to find something else to be, you know, jazzed up about.
Yeah, you got to compete, right? Every day. That's something.
Every day, dude.
Sometimes it's
every day.
Stupid stuff, too, just for fun.
Every
All right.
Day. Every day.
Well, it sounds like, I think it sounds like me and you are just having a phone conversation. We're actually doing a podcast. So let's get into this Cadet World stuff. And I guess, you know, if we want to look big picture, which I know that's something that you mentioned, is that we should look big picture at this because now we just had the Junior Worlds, the Senior Worlds, and the Cadet Worlds. And kind of across the board, America's had, is it fair to say the most success of all time? Is that a fair statement?
It has to be. I mean, 13 gold medals, first at the senior level, which is only the second time it's ever happened. First at the junior level, hasn't happened very often. Second at the cadet level, we had the most world champions in four at that level. One of our world champions at the cadet level was an alternate. You know, we had a freaking world silver medals at the senior level come from the last chance qualifier down 6-0, just got fresh out of college. We had four of our eight world team members were in college this year at the senior level. I mean, the American wrestling landscape, dude, is insanely different, and it almost feels like it's happened overnight. And we've touched on it, but, you know, I mean, I think there's only so much we can say about the cadets today, so I thought we should talk a little bit about, like, one, it's freaking awesome this is happening.
Yeah.
And two, you know, why do you think it's happening? Why is it happening, and why do you feel like it's happened instantly? And do you think there's longevity to this? Do you think this is a sign of what's ahead, or is this just like an anomaly?
No, I think it's a sign of what's ahead, and we talked, we touched on this. I don't even know if we talked in depth about this. Obviously I'm biased. I think the academy system has a strong influence. You know, and if you look historically, there was a few places that had really good programs from a younger age, whether it was, say, the Minnesota Storm always had a really good thing going on, or, you know, like a Blair Academy type of situation. And those people had a lot of success. And then when you saw, you know, I would credit Overtime when Sean Barmett started. I believe he started in 99 as kind of like the first wrestling school, wrestling academy. What I don't know, whatever you want to call it. Not a club that goes from March, April, May, which is, you know, that's probably what you had when you were growing up. That's what I had when I was growing up.
It's almost like when we were growing up, it was almost like they were like pop-up shops.
Yeah.
Like, it would go in the local high school for three months.
Yeah, be in the local high school room or be in the local college or something, and you go March, April, May, and then, you know, Northern Plains would be over and you'd be done or whatever. And so I want to say Overtime was the first really big one. And so you kind of saw their success explode. You know, I kind of watched it from my brother during my brother's high school time, which he graduated in 2005. And then obviously beyond that. And then you saw a lot of other ones start popping up. And now, you know, if you look at pretty much all the guys on either the cadet or junior, and I don't even, maybe senior, I haven't thought about the seniors very much, but they're training in an environment, a high-level environment from a young age.
Right.
And that's a huge thing. I mean, and
You know what's funny is that I think that's the part. I mean, that's clearly at least maybe the number one reason. Definitely top two or three. Could not agree more with that. I also believe that cumulative scoring, going back to cumulative scoring, is another big reason, because you know I think that. That's, you know, it's I feel like that attributes to why it feels like it's a little bit overnight as opposed to gradual, because the academy systems have been in place for quite some time. So even though that's a part of it, you know, I feel like those academy wrestlers that were trained at a high level now got a rule set that was more beneficial
sure.
to the American.
Well, one of the things, Tommy, you know, and well, okay, yeah, I mean, that definitely 100% helps. You and I both wrestled under the other system, which was god awful and not good for Americans. You know, one of the things that the academy
it was very tactical, Ben. I mean, it was just catered more to the cat and mouse Russian style of wrestling.
And you could have a weighted disc that you could flip. Remember that?
Exactly.
That's why they went to the ball.
Yeah, corruption as well. Yeah, corruption. Yeah, that matters too.
But. You know, one of the things about the academy system, and I'm going to relate this to Wisconsin specifically, versus a few of the other states, and then I'm going to say that, you know, and then I'm going to relate it to the world championships, is that your kids are only going to get as good as who they have to compete with, right? And so if you're competing with, you know, say Wisconsin, I believe in the flow rankings has 8 total guys who are ranked in the flow rankings. I think that's the correct number, right? That's not even one per weight class, and that's not saying we don't have some good guys beyond that.
How many?
That's one.
How many are AWA? How many are AWA, Ben?
Four. I think. Well, four are ranked of AWA, and I believe there's 8 total. So then, when you look at, you know, okay. Well, my guys are only going to reach a certain level based on who they have to compete with. Now we have to really go out of state and really find this other competition, right? And then you just go 2 hours south to Chicago, and you see we talk about overtime being the first one, and then since then there's been a whole bunch that have opened up.
Whole bunch.
And so now these guys are freaking competing against each other every single weekend, and just stud after stud after stud. And so you realize that they don't got to raise their game at the national tournaments. They got to raise their game every single weekend and compete against guys like that. So then when you go on the national level for the United States, you know, when there's a couple academies or a couple wrestling schools who are putting out high-level kids, those kids are going to obviously have some success, right? Then when you start having a whole bunch and these kids got to start competing against each other from a very young age and they're elevating their games because of it, I think that's when and if you look at Russia, and I mean, I don't know their kid system real well, but I remember when we went to Vladikavkaz, and they have all of these different Olympians from different countries training in the same facility, and you know, that's a very good insight into why they raise their game so much.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me. I mean, I feel like somebody should do like a real study on this instead of you and I just spitballing here, although we have pretty good backgrounds to be able to spitball on it.
Yeah,
but I think another thing, Ben. Not to toot Flow Wrestling and Martin Floriani's horn too much here, but you know the access that everybody has to wrestling, to learning, to watching. You know, you learn a lot by just watching, by example, by what people have to say about how they train, by how they compete, by the skills that they're hitting. I mean, that influence is instrumental in our sport because it's not covered in the mainstream. It's never covered.
And so the other thing there is
I'm watching it with my son.
Yeah.
My son can hit the he does. I want you to know I have nothing to do with this. From my 7-year-old son, from watching Imar, because he loves Imar. He likes to watch Imar. From watching Imar on YouTube, he can do an over tie by just like Imar does it.
Sweet.
Pretty damn good for a 7-year-old. So that's just a microcosm of what I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
But I feel like that stuff matters.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you think about how that compounds in so many different iterations, you know, first of all, interviews are important, and just developing an affinity for the sport because you get to watch it a lot. You know, all of those things, you know, the
huge
access to watching this stuff it kind of fuels that academy style. It fuels the technical development. It fuels, I watched Kurt McHenry win the world. Why can't I? You know, there's probably an 11-year-old kid. There's an 11-year-old kid that was watching that on track, whereas 15 years ago, he wouldn't have been watching that. He would have read about it in AWN a month later. So, to me, access, academies, and cumulative scoring, to me, those are the three. And I also, USA Wrestling. USA Wrestling's commitment to the developmental ages. Those four things, to me, like, all combined. I can't decide which is number one. Probably academies.
Well, and then, another one I want to add in
there. I think all four of those things.
With what you said about flow is that I think they've flow covering the world team trials, the cadet and junior world team trials, has helped place a larger emphasis on those. I mean, I don't especially the cadet world team trials. I don't feel like, say, 10 years ago, that people were thinking of the cadet world team trials as that big of a deal. You know, it was a good tournament, but it wasn't held at nearly the prestige. And, you know, from what I remember, because right now I go to all the large youth national tournaments. The toughest brackets are either Super 32 or UWW cadets, no doubt. And that's exclusively high school, so obviously UWW junior would be college kids also. And I don't think with UWW cadets, I don't think that was the case 10 years ago, that was the toughest. I think Fargo was a lot tougher.
I agree. And I think that flow, track, USA Wrestling, all of that combined, and the academies, emphasizing, you know, the most elite events in the world, you know, it's put the cadet world championships, it's put these age group world championships, it's put that aspiration above Fargo, which is only good for all of us, you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. And that's, you know, so I think that's drawn the best kids or drawn better kids than were there. And then, you know, you kind of said it, but UWW was instrumental in promoting these programs. Whereas, you know, like I said, in 2004 when I made the junior world team, we didn't go. And now they're bringing these kids in to the OTC, giving them longer training camps, giving them great resources, and making it happen.
Yeah. Anyways, it's really cool. I mean, it's cool to think that, you know, and it's kind of like a machine. It's like when you got something running real hot, you know, for example, like Jeff Jordan, I think they're going for their 18th consecutive state
18th?
Title.
Are you kidding me?
And so
someone needs a handicap.
I mean, honest to God, I think if no coach walked into that room for the entire season, they would still win the state by like 80 points. You know what I mean? Because it's a factory that runs itself. It's like everything feeds off of itself. And so to me, it's like when I see these 13 world champions we got this year at all the age groups, it's almost like that production will produce an additional 17 next year. You know, I'm just throwing random numbers. Like it's almost like it's going to feed itself to where it's going to get easier, not harder, for us to maintain that success, which is commonplace in business and every other walk of life.
Yeah, what do they call that in have you read the Good to Great series?
Yeah.
I mean, they call that the flywheel, right? Once it's hard to push, and it's hard to push, and once you get it going, it goes pretty strong.
Yeah, exactly. The freaking USA Wrestling is humming right now. We are humming. This country in wrestling is humming, which is great.
So, you know, the one thing I will say, the one danger of this is that the haves and the have-nots in wrestling get so far separated. And I think this is something that wrestling clubs, you know, something that we actually need to, you know, help not help that gap not grow so large to whereas regular kids just don't want to compete anymore because they're so far behind, right? So we got to encourage more kids to participate. We got to encourage the local clubs to grow. We got to do all that stuff. Otherwise, eventually, you know, it's going to hum for a while, but then once you get less and less and less participants, then that's a really bad thing. And we also talked about this a couple weeks ago on the episode where we were talking about youth wrestling specifically.
Absolutely.
All right, Tommy, so let's get into the actual Cadet World Championships. We got 10 weight classes here. Took second place, lost to Russia. Four gold medals, most gold medals of anybody, and six medals. So, you know, overall, really successful performance. I guess
I'll tell you what's funny. I'll tell you what's funny, Ben, is that if it weren't for the junior and senior level performances, we wouldn't just pass over the fact that we got second and had four champions like we just did.
Second, so terrible.
You know, I mean, it's like we freaking lost to Russia, but we had more champs than them. And in any other year, that's, you know, five times more newsworthy than it is right now. But it's still good. I mean, I'm certainly not ashamed of it. But, yeah, I mean, it was a good performance. I mean, they did a good job. And, yeah. You know, if Decatur doesn't get royally screwed.
I don't think he got hosed, Tommy.
Explain to me how so.
I watched all the men. I didn't watch any of them live. But, you know, I read that, oh, Decatur got screwed. And so I watched the match waiting for the screw job. And you know I can't stand the UWW. And I love to bash them a little bit. I didn't see which one was, you know, there was a couple that were, they were pretty damn close. But there was nothing where I was like, wow, that is terrible.
Well, I mean, not to
are
be...
Are you talking about the last thing when it kind of laid a takedown? Is that the one we're talking about? Or are we talking about...
Yeah, there was one earlier in that period. And you know what pisses me off is I actually agree with you a little bit. It's just, it wasn't really a screw job. But that match was officiated, I thought, in a questionable fashion where there's like three different ways Decatur could have, should have won that match. And had he won...
Well,
I mean, this guy.
The biggest issue for Jordan Decatur is that he shut it down when he was up 6-0. I mean, that to me, that's the bigger issue. Is, you know, he got up 6-0 and just stopped wrestling.
No doubt. Either way, if Decatur does, if he wins that match, whether it's by his own accord or maybe, you know, a little bit more unbiased officiating, you know, we got ourselves another title. So at any rate. Four champs is almost cooler than, you know, winning it. I mean, 40% of the cadet weight classes are world champions. That's incredible. You know what I mean?
Most definitely. So let's go weight by weight.
Okay.
Let's see, what is it? Four, it's 92 pounds. I think that's 42 kilos. We got Cole Skinner out of Ohio.
Medina.
Man, super young, so I don't really know this kid that well. I know I actually did a camp with him at Burnett Train, but I haven't got to watch him nearly at all.
I'm an Ohio guy, and I haven't got to watch him. I've obviously heard of him, and he's tough and all that good stuff.
Well, I didn't get to watch. Correct?
Yeah. Yep.
So, he had a little bit of a rough go at it, kind of, you know. But him, besides Decatur, I would say. I hate saying this, but probably the worst performance, right?
Yeah, Ohio didn't do well. Skinner, Decatur, and Tag all could have, you know, wrestled a little better.
Yeah, okay, so let's go. 101, 46 kilograms. Kurt McHenry, second world title in a row. Man, he's so smooth. And we call that movie Does the Thorn, where he's going kind of underhook for a headlock, bounce, and then chucks him over. Wow,
yeah, he's
wow,
really
was he good
at
there.
It.
But
I want there, and I like his outside elbow tie to that duck.
Yeah.
He does it to both sides, which is super athletic, or you know, innate advantage, as you would put it.
I bet he's practiced it a few times, Tommy.
This dude can scrap. I mean, you know, I'm embarrassed to say I've heard the name for a couple years, but who's he trained by? You know, out there, and you know, what's his background, Ben?
Well, I don't know what his training situation is. I believe he's from Delaware or Maryland or somewhere like that. And
Virginia,
that's it. There you go. One of those states out there that's not very good.
oh my God!
Well, you know what happens.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know what. Obviously, you know, he's been on two world teams now, two world championships, so he probably. He probably spent quite a bit of time at the OTC, but I don't know that his specific home training situation is in an elite program.
Yeah, okay, so you don't know either, and he's a two-time cadet world champ.
Don't know. Do not know.
Yeah, no, I was impressed. I only watched his finals match against the Georgian, but he was super impressive.
Yeah, and so, hey, I want to say, and listen, I'm all for showing personality, and I'm all for celebration, but, man, I was kind of annoyed by his celebration. Well, first of all, and I don't want to make accusations, but it sure looked to me like he tried to put his nuts in that dude's face, for one.
I think he did.
And it wasn't just like for a second. It was for a couple seconds. That's completely uncalled for. And then he walks over and like says, "What's up, sucker?" and puts his hands out for like 5 seconds, or maybe even more than five seconds. I mean, it wasn't like a "What's up, sucker?"
And the guy was not like punking McHenry at all. I mean, he was just devastated that he lost in the World Finals. That's all he was.
Well, I thought maybe that there was some heat from backstage somewhere that we didn't know about, because there seemed to be some serious animosity, and I hope that's not just how he operates on a regular basis. And I haven't seen him compete a lot enough to know.
Here's the one thing. I agree. I did not like his conduct.
And that's hard. I love it when people show some personality and show some animosity.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you're usually you know, on this train.
But nuts in the face is too much for me.
It was disrespectful. It wasn't. It wasn't showmanship. It was disrespect for the opponent.
Yes.
And in a pretty deliberate, like, in your face way. The reason why I'm not as frustrated, and I don't want to bag on him as much as I would somebody else, is we're talking about a 101-pound kid.
Well, so, I think it's way too irrelevant, maybe, but the fact that he's 17.
All right, yeah. I guess his weight is irrelevant. It just helps the story a little bit.
Tommy, you're what would be a sizist?
Yeah, I'm a sizist.
Sizist.
At any rate, I just hope that somebody's around him saying, "Hey, man, we're happy for you," but
clean it up a little bit.
Not even a little bit. That was just ridiculous, and there's no place for that in the sport. In any sport. It's not just wrestling.
Yes, I agree. Well, maybe professional wrestling, that would be good.
right.
Okay. So, yeah, he's a beast. I don't know even what the heck grade is he in. Is he going to be a junior or going to be a senior?
I don't even know. I don't think he's going to be a senior.
Well, okay. So I'm going to Google that right now. And does he have 1 year left of cadets? I don't know that one either. I'm going to Google it right now. Okay, so 110, another Ohio boy, Julian, not Gabe. Man, he didn't have a bad. He really didn't have a bad tournament. He had what was it? 2 wild matches. I watched every one of his matches. I'm trying to freaking bring it up now, but I want to see. Didn't he lose 9-8? I didn't memorize.
Yeah, it was 9-8. Yep.
And you know, he gave up. He gave up too many points. He's got this, and kind of across the board. And I've never watched the Cadet World Championship this closely, but, man, Tommy, there's such a skill discrepancy between this level and the junior level. Because I felt like when I was watching the junior level, they're not that far away from the senior level. You know, I could see them being there in a year or two. But with this cadet level,
I think the biggest reason is because at the cadet level, you don't have virtually nobody has any man strength.
Yeah.
So it's like the ability to score and get scored on is just easier.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because there's something
because,
there.
Because it's like if you're a cadet and you get stuck underneath some guy with like featherweight hips, it's like you split the middle, cut the corner. You know, it's just they're just not dropping those hammers down on certain positions where it's like, this is physics. I've got it figured out. I have man strength and no points here.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the cadet level, you know what I mean?
Yeah, especially Tag. I mean, Tag looks super young, super physically immature. I like his movement and I like his stuff, but he's just a little sloppy and not very physically intimidating or physically powerful. And, like I said, I think there's a big jump between here and the juniors. And obviously, these are the best cadets in America, so they're going to make that jump, very likely.
Of course. It's not an indictment on them at all. It's just, you know, to your point, those juniors, like when you watch Gable Steveson or Dayton Fix, you're like,
or Mark Hall.
Man, they're knocking on the door at the senior level. When you watch the cadets, it's like, you know.
Yeah.
They need some time.
Yes, 100%. Let's see. So Kurt McHenry, he wrestled in cadets in 15. So that means he does not have any more years left in the UWW cadet division.
So that means he's a junior in high school then, right?
That means he's...
There's no way he's a sophomore.
There's no way he's a sophomore. So he's either a junior or a senior in high school. Let's see if this tells me.
I don't believe that he's a senior. I mean, do you really think a senior made 101?
Do you know he beat Julian Tagg in the finals of the Beast of the East? I did not know that.
Really?
Yep, I'm looking it up right now. Yeah, I, you know, obviously I would lean towards, let's see, Maryland Independence Day Tournament. I bet this will tell me his age. This is 2016. Damn it, does not tell me his age. Okay, so we'll just go with the fact that he's a junior and not a senior. All right, Julian Tagg. After Julian Tagg, Jordan Decatur. No, I'm skipping someone. Who am I skipping here? 54. Who am I skipping? He didn't get a medal, obviously, if we're not... if we forgot about him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Robert Howard.
I forget.
Robert Howard, solid wrestler out of New Jersey. To me, it looked like, and I think I've heard this somewhere else before, but does not have a gigantic amount of freestyle experience. To me, it looked like, especially in the consolation match against, I'm trying to remember who the Ukrainian guy, he just did a few silly things where, you know, it was like he was going for a crotch lift or a chest lock, and he kind of put himself on his back where he probably should have just stuck with some basic defense. You're trying to incorporate freestyle techniques, but when you're maybe not,
you know, and again, you're gonna, you know, I didn't watch the match, but you're gonna see that at the cadet level where people are just now getting that instinctive, you know, awareness about freestyle because, you know, I mean, you don't start wrestling freestyle here in like the fifth or sixth grade, pretty much, right?
Yeah, I mean, nine years old, so is the earliest you can do it. I want to say it's like fourth grade. I always get confused on the ages compared to the grades. I know once we get up to like eighth grade, but not super young. All right, so Robert Howard goes 1-2. Jordan Decatur goes 0-1 as he does not get the wrestle back because he lost to Greece, and then Greece lost to Azerbaijan, I believe. No, who the heck did Greece lose to?
Yep.
So, someone like
that.
It
was Eastern Bloc, I know that.
Yeah, it was Eastern Bloc. Yep. He lost to Japan 12-1. Got worked. Okay, 63.
This the Greek guy is Eastern Bloc, right? Wasn't he?
Is that
he's not an
possible.
Actual Greek or something?
I mean, Greeks don't know how to wrestle, yeah. So it wouldn't shock me if he was from Russia or somewhere to that effect. I'm bashing on everyone. I said, who does Maryland, Delaware, and Virginia don't know how to wrestle? Oh, most people mad at me, Tommy.
Maryland had 4 world champs this year, by the way.
Maryland, okay. Helen, Kyle. Who else? McHenry's Virginia.
I don't know. I just saw a headline.
Wait, no, McHenry did wrestle.
Is McHenry from Virginia or Maryland?
I'm on his track profile right now. It says he's from Leesburg, Virginia, but he wrestles for St. Paul, Maryland. So he must be on the border or something.
Gotcha.
Well, then it was just who claims it, Virginia or Maryland? I don't even know.
Well, somebody said on Twitter that.
Oh, and then Aaron Brooks, obviously. Damn, Maryland. Wow, I'm bagging on Maryland, and they got 4 world champs. That makes me look terrible. All Maryland does, crab kicks, football, and wrestling world champions. Boom. okay, so we got.
Who's next?
Ja'Cory Teamer. This is another one where I'm going to say very similar but better than Julian Tagg, where he's kind of skinny still. He's kind of physically immature. He's got a lot of really nice, tricky things he does, but he also gives up a lot of points.
He does, but, you know, he also is pretty darn upright like a Russian, and I think we talked about this on the World Team Trial.
You know his coach
is,
right?
A few months. Yeah, it's Bulgar Aruzhev.
Yes. Yep.
And so it's like if you're gonna stand straight up as a 15-year-old, 16-year-old kid, you know, you've got to really he's gonna perfect that whole Eastern European like way of wrestling. In my opinion, I was very impressed. I think this dude's an animal. What did he lose 3-3 in the semis?
Well, he 4-3. The Japanese guy.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I like I said a lot of great things, but then you know so like the. I ended up watching his was it round of 16 when he beat the Turkish guy 11-10, and it was like, it was freaking wild because he got up big and then he kind of just did, like I said, did some silly things, let the guy back in the match. I mean, when you give it up 10 points, obviously you're making some mistakes, right?
Right.
So, yeah.
I was impressed. I watched his bronze match. He's got that hydraulic, you know, like low back strength when he's underneath. He can lift and get physical with it. I was impressed. I was impressed with him at the trials, though. I mean, that was one of the guys that I was like, holy
yeah,
smokes.
Yeah, he put it on.
You know what I mean? I'm very impressed. Yeah.
Okay, 69 kilos. And so this guy would kind of, he would go against the grain to what I've been saying with a lot of these other guys is Will Luan, you know, he is not very dynamic, but he never gets out of position. He never gives up easy scores. He never does stupid things. And he just grinds you out.
He's so disciplined. You know, I can honestly say this, that coming away from the World Team Trials, you know, Will Luan, because I had never really watched him until the trials, he wasn't the type of guy, he doesn't wrestle the style that you would predict to be successful at the international level. And so him winning was a very pleasant surprise to me, but to your point, he's disciplined, he's never out of position, smart wrestler, he's got good wrestling IQ, and I guess that was the reason he won. I mean, freaking cadet world champ.
Yeah, he's powerful too. I mean, you know, it's kind of something I kind of said against Teg and Teamer, which is not an indictment. They're going to get stronger as they get older, but you know, they just don't
right.
generate as much power in certain situations where Luan is just super powerful. You know, kind of pushes guys around and forces his will. Doesn't get pushed out of bounds at all. You know, kind of scores on the edge. So, you know, he would kind of be, for me, he's kind of an outlier on this team in that sense.
No doubt. I mean, he was probably the one guy that maybe kind of looked like a junior a little bit, although Brooks is pretty got.
Yeah, so let's go to Brooks. Brooks, but Tommy, I don't know. I think Brooks falls in the other category where does some freaking fantastic things. Like, I want to say in the finals, I want to say he was up 9-0. I'm trying to remember because I watched all the matches yesterday. I think he was up 9-0. You know, and then the score ends up 13-8. So he ended up giving up a whole bunch of points. Maybe, you know, in some of those, I feel like, you know, maybe he was conceding because he was up big and didn't want to give up worse. But
right.
some of it was, he was bad decision-making, you know, giving up quite a few points. So, you know, kind of like a Teamer, super dynamic, but you know, also making some mistakes, which this is 15 through 17 year olds, so at this age, that's going to happen.
Yeah, impressive performance, though, nonetheless. You know, I mean, I thought that he was physical, though. I mean, yeah, he had some slop going on there because he's a cadet, but I thought he was a pretty physical wrestler.
Yeah, I mean, definitely strong. You know, and the other thing to talk about here is that he was the backup, actually, right? You know, he lost to Travis, like broke his ankle. And so Eric Brooks got put on the team, and damn, he made the most of it, didn't he?
Right, absolutely. Alternate to the title, Gilman, last chance qualifier to the silver medal. You know, we've got a lot of these going on.
Yeah, and so, you know, another interesting thing about Aaron Brooks is that he has already determined that he is going to, he's going to take a year at the Olympic Training Center right away, which I believe he's the only person out of this class, you know, he's a senior right now, to commit to doing that.
Right.
All right, 187 pounds, Gavin Hoffman, Ohio State commit. What do you got on him?
Hey, man, I like it. Bronze medal out of the guy. I mean, I'm happy. Stud.
Yeah.
He's a Maryland boy. That's another Maryland guy. That's another medalist.
He's Pennsylvania.
Oh, I thought he was Maryland.
No, he's Pennsylvania. Well, I'm gonna Google
it. Oh, jeez.
I'm pretty sure he's Pennsylvania.
No, I think you're right.
I think because I want to say he's Bison Legend, but who knows? Maybe he was when he was a younger gentleman, and then
right.
Then he moved up. So So, you know, I thought he looked good. I thought he was kind of a little bit overwhelmed against the Iranian guy. I think the Iranian guy hit a couple gut wrenches on him. You know, Gavin has not known, you know, has been known to be a better folk styler than a freestyler. I also thought he looked really lean. You know, he has wrestled up to 220, so for him to make 187, he looked really lean. I thought he looked right. really good. You know, he's another guy that could use a few more years of freestyle seasoning, I believe, before he would make his biggest mark. Yeah, so he did wrestle 220 last summer at the Nationals.
Get him out to the Ohio RTC, you know. It's a place where, you know, that's why he's going to the Buckeyes.
Who have they ever coached in freestyle?
That's right.
That is right. Okay. And lastly, we're going to end up with Daniel Gregg, or Greg Daniel. He's got two first names, Kirk Vlitt. Man, this guy's an animal, and I'll tell you, he wrestled one of the kids that I coach, who was he was a senior this year at Super 32, and you know, I said, oh, he's a sophomore, how good can he be? And this kid was good. I was like, holy crap, how is he so good? He's a freaking sophomore.
I'll tell you what's interesting is, oh, I'm embarrassed to say I didn't even know his name. I never, and then I'm like, I'm reading on Twitter, Kirk Vlitt into the semis with the tech fall. I'm like, who the heck is this guy? How come I never heard of him? So embarrassed to say that, but I watched him more than anybody. I watched three of his matches because of, you know, he's an upper weight and never heard of him. Like, I got to learn about this guy. Could not agree more, Ben. Holy cow, this guy is incredible. I mean, when it comes to like his physical prowess and his age, this dude has got the skills to pay the bills. I mean, he is the real deal.
Real deal, 100%. And so
there is no way he's going to Minnesota. He is a heavyweight.
You think he's a heavyweight for sure? Yeah,
that ship is. Oh, that ship sailed.
I don't think he's that big. I don't think he's as big as he looks, Tommy. He wrestled 195 all year.
He's. You know what's funny is that he's going to be a heavyweight.
I think he's about 205. I think he's about 205 right now.
Okay, so. How tall do you think he is?
6'2".
Yeah. So
you think that deal?
He's already a heavyweight.
Wow.
I think he's already going to be a heavyweight no matter what he does. That being said, if he could make 97, if he could do it,
yeah.
He shouldn't because he's tall enough and
go
and
Bucks.
He should go up anyway.
Go Bucks. Right? You're trying to keep these guys out of Minnesota.
But even if he could make 97, when you have that type of – what's that?
I said you're trying to keep this guy out of Minnesota because they already got world champ Gable Stevenson. They got world champ Daniel Kirkvlett too.
I think he is a heavyweight. I think he is one already in the making. And even if he could go 97, he's going to have that build – where he could also build into a heavyweight.
Yeah, because like, he's only a junior this year, Tommy.
He should build into a heavyweight.
Yeah, I kind of think
yeah, he's, this feel, guy's a freaking
I
heavyweight.
I feel the same way. I feel bad for Minnesota, though. They got a commitment out of the guy already. Won
too,
a damn cadet world title.
He's an animal. But, well, you know, you got, he's a pinnacle-trained guy, so he trains with Paulson and Lawrence. You know, and I'm sure that they've got some, you know, rightfully so, they got a little bias towards the U.
Well, yeah,
you know, and it's just like it's just, and you know, it's not a no brainer. Actually, it is to me. Actually, after watching, it's a no brainer that he's a heavyweight. But maybe a year ago it wasn't. Whenever he committed, you know what I mean?
Sure.
They're trying to make it work because I mean those two dudes at 97 at heavyweight would be scary, but. Yeah. I think this Berkeley guy's a heavyweight. And I know Gable Stevens. I mean, Gable Stevens is incredible. He is the guy. But this Kirkley, I was so impressed with his range, his talent, his skill set, his mental toughness for the weight class. Because let's be honest, I mean, I'm a heavyweight, Ben, but I'm the first one to tell you that there's a greater population of mentally tough guys, you know, at the lower weights and middle weights than upper weights at the high school level.
Yeah.
You know, there's not many guys, you know, at the high school level. It's not as deep in terms of guys grit their teeth and figure it out. You know what I mean? And this guy has that. And for his range and ability, I was thoroughly impressed. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I've already been impressed. This guy's an animal. I'm not sold on the fact that he can't go to Minnesota because Gable's going to start as a true freshman. He's already a year older. So here's the deal, Tommy. If he's a year older, Kirkwood does a gray shirt, then does a red shirt. That's only 1 year he's got to make 197, and then he wrestles heavyweight after that. What do you think?
I think he should go heavyweight, man.
So you think he should go somewhere? Where do you think he should go to school?
You know, I don't know. I'm not even saying that because of anything other than when I look at him, if I was the kid's dad, I'd be like, you need to go heavyweight. The bigger they get, the harder they fall. You have greater range, greater skills. You have more, you know, you're going to be like a riddle at heavyweight. You're a riddle to your opponent. It's like,
wow, how fun will heavyweight be? I mean, because heavyweight's going to now have Kirkwood, Stevenson, world champ. They got, what's the cat from Indiana that everyone loves?
Mason Paris.
And then the other guy, which we haven't talked about, is Colton Schultz won a Greco world title at heavyweight. I mean,
and Braxton Amos.
And Braxton, well, is he younger or no?
He's a junior. I watched him because he beat Kirkwood at the cadets last year, in kind of a decisive fashion. Not decisive, but just, you know, he was the right guy won. But, you know, they're both so young. I actually watched Amos work out this weekend at an RTC workout, but they're both so young that it's like, you know, throw the cards in here on who's going to have a better college career.
Well, this should
be
fun.
Yeah, we've got a great crop of big guys. Man, I didn't even thought of that. I mean, and Stevenson's leading the charge, and I am still saying Stevenson is on that mat in the Olympic trials semifinals, slugging it out with somebody. I mean, he's going to be right there in 2020.
I agree 100%. All right, Tom, you got anything else for us about the
Cadet
Worlds?
What a crop.
You got any last thoughts or no?
No, man, I'm good.
Okay, so listen, we
no,
we,
congrats on your retirement.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And good job, USA, this summer. I mean, that closes out the summer.
America, incredible 13 summer. Gold medals. Wow.
That's right.
Well, all right, Tommy, you have a great day, and I will talk to you next week.
Later, my brother.
You are listening to the T. Rowan Funky Show, and it is brought to you by Defense Soap. Defend what you've built. Tommy, I got to say, I tried these products. He shipped me a box. I love them. I've had ringworm issues for a long time. So I'm looking forward to putting these in my repertoire and hoping the ringworm does not come back ever.
No doubt, Ben. And to top that off, the company was created by wrestlers. Guy Seiko wrestled at Cleveland State University. His son was an All-American in Virginia, so these people really get it. They know what the wrestling community needs.